Welcome to the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Joe Masato, joined by Barry Trammell. Here to recap the Thunder's 113-107 loss at the Denver Nuggets on Saturday night at Ball Arena. Barry, this was a crazy one. Like, it was. I don't know if we podcasted after that Thunder win in Denver a few weeks ago, but that was probably the most surprising result of the season. And I don't want to overreact to NBA regular season games because crazy stuff happens. But this one was hard to fathom, the Thunder almost winning this game. No Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Obviously, no Giddey, Dort, Kenrich Williams, Mike Muscala, Robinson Earl, Jerome. The list goes on and on and on. Darius Bazley misses the second half with a knee sprain. The Thunder has eight players. And yet, with under 3 minutes to play, the Thunder has a two-point lead on the Nuggets. And for a second, I thought, oh my gosh, they might actually win this game. Just a wild one when I expected to be covering a blowout this evening.
It made no sense at all. It seemed clear to me that Denver had a trouble staying engaged emotionally or mentally, whichever the case may be. I mean, Jokic is sensational. He had 35 points and missed two shots, and yet he only got 15 shots.
Probably should have taken a few more.
Yeah, maybe getting 30 shots, and maybe you don't have to wait for the Thunder to make a couple of miscues in the last 2 minutes to win the game.
Yeah.
But, you know, guys like Lindy Waters played well, and Aaron Wiggins actually, not that he played well, but he found a little hot streak after not doing much. Maladone was good again.
Krejci made some plays.
I mean, yeah, you know, Trey Mann didn't play well or shoot well, but he got a couple of hot streaks. Isaiah Roby actually played pretty well, 6-7 shooting. So,
Thunder shot 39% from three.
Yeah, and missed one foul shot, 15-16 from the line. So, yeah, they had 29 assists. Nuggets had 33. But, you know, when you look at it, it's just Thunder sort of punching above its weight class with this basically third team roster that it's trotting out there.
Yeah. The thing about Denver, I agree with you that they didn't look engaged, but there's really no excuse because coming into this game, they were 1-2 against the Thunder this season. And not only that, but they hadn't been playing real well lately. They're sitting sixth in the West. They have a slight lead on Minnesota to stay out of the play-in. So you look at Denver, like, this was a really important game for them to win. Maybe they thought it'd be easy to win, but still, I was a little surprised given the stakes for them.
Yeah, and I think when I say they weren't engaged, I don't mean from the start necessarily. I mean, it just seemed like, you know, they'd get a comfortable lead at one point. What, they lead 16 in the first half, I think it was. And they just sort of relax, put it on cruise control a couple of times during the game when there was no reason to. They led by 11 going into the fourth quarter and then just, you know, didn't get many stops or much of anything. And then the Thunder made it nip and tuck down the whole way. And what it came down to was the Thunder had a couple of, in the last 2:05, it looks like maybe, Thunder had a couple of bad turnovers. Roby lost the ball in the lane. Pokuševski operating the pick and roll threw the ball away. That's really what allowed
Trey Mann drove it into traffic.
Yeah, so that's what really allowed the Nuggets to sort of take back control. Monty Morris.
He hit Morris shot. At that three after that Poku turnover, trying to find Roby on the lob.
Yeah, so I don't know, but for whatever reason, this Thunder team, in any incarnation, plays well against this Nugget team.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't explain it.
The Thunder are going to destroy the Blazers if they play like this in Portland a couple of nights from now.
Yes, they are. They sure are. I don't know what the Thunder can do to try to lose to Portland. I don't know.
Look at the upside down standing. So the Magic actually sort of coughed away a victory. Them and Houston are now tied at 20-55. Detroit is 20-54. The Thunder is 21-53. So a game back of Detroit for that third from the bottom. Thunder hosts Detroit later in one of these final eight games, seven games, whatever we're down to now. But Bear, just to look back at this one, it wasn't one of those nights where, you know, sometimes when the Thunder is so shorthanded, especially when Shea's out, you'll have like a crazy performance, like Trey Mann will score 30 or Poku will go nuts or, you know, Maladone. And they all scored. Maladone had 20, Mann had 15, Poku had 17, but it was more balanced. Like Waters had 14 off the bench. It was a really nice game for him. I thought he shot the ball in rhythm in the first quarter. He had that big run out dunk late and was 4 of 10 from 3 and had 14 points and kind of got back on track as far as shooting the ball.
Yes, and his misses were close, I thought, so that's a good sign. He was, you know, he had a great steal. Who was it? Was it Barton or was it somebody in the open court?
Might have been Bones Highland.
Highland. I mean, he made a steal on the run. He just sort of took the ball away from him on a drive, which was, you know, you don't see many steals like that. So that was impressive. One thing about the Nuggets, the Nugget bench was terrible tonight. Let's see, they totaled 25 points. Is that right? 11, 16, 25 points total.
My analysis is DeMarcus Cousins isn't very good anymore.
Yeah, he's not. Doesn't seem to be helping him much.
No.
Austin Rivers didn't play well at all either. He usually plays pretty well against the Thunder. Didn't tonight.
When Bones Highland only took three shots.
Jermichael
he's so
Green
dynamic.
And Jermichael Green, Bryn Forbes were non-factors. Just. Not much of a bench there for the and this Devon Reed, who I have no idea who that is. You know, he plays how many minutes? He played 6 minutes and is minus 11 in that time. So Nuggets are missing Murray and Michael Porter Jr. There's not any question about that.
Yeah. They've just got no hope to, you know, win the West without those guys. But if those guys were healthy all season, they'd be right there, I think. With as good as Jokic has been. Do you have Jokic or Embiid as number one right now in the MVP race?
I think I'd go with Jokic.
I should say Giannis as well. He's right in that mix.
Yeah, Giannis too. But I think I'd go with Jokic. When you take Jokic off this team, I mean, the on-off numbers for Jokic are just crazy.
Yeah, it is.
The Nuggets. And tonight we saw it. He's plus 19, for crying out loud. So, you know, when he's off the floor, he was off the floor for basically 13 minutes tonight. And the Thunder outscored the Nuggets by 13 points. So,
yeah. So, when Aaron Gordon and Jokic were on the floor, they were good, and when they weren't, they weren't very good.
Right. And you know who didn't do much tonight? It was Jeff Green.
Uncle Jeff.
Uncle Jeff had not, you know, he only played 20 minutes, had 8 points. But Monty Morris had the big shot we talked about, but he didn't seem like he impacted the game otherwise very much.
No.
Which was similar to what he did when the Thunder beat him, you know, a few weeks ago, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of uninspiring. I will say, this Nuggets crowd was one of the best I've seen all season. Like,
it looked good. Yeah, it looked good.
It was packed from court to rafters. I mean, and they were loud. My only complaint here, and I know I'm going to sound like an old man, but it is the loudest music.
Is it really?
In-game stuff, and just your ears are ringing by the end of it.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that a bit. I guess I've gotten a little used to it, because over the last, in the last 10 years, 12 years that I've been dealing with the Thunder, including very few regular season road games, but, you know, virtually all the playoff road games, I don't even notice it. really. Don't even notice the thunder music, the opposing team's music. I guess I just tuned it out. And hadn't been to as many, haven't been to near as many games here during the pandemic. So maybe, you know, maybe I've just lost my senses on that. Maybe it's, maybe when I go back to the arena on a regular basis, I'll say, what's with the loud music? But
yeah, I was sitting by Steve McGehee, and we're pretty close next to each other, and you have to like yell to be able to talk to each other in the game. But yeah, okay. Barry, let's get to the news of the day, because it was a newsy day here at Ball Arena. Mark Daigneault, pregame, starts off with some significant injury updates. First off, he leads with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and I'm going to pull up the quote here. Shai was out tonight. This was only the third game he's missed in the second half since coming back from that ankle injury. The first two, of course, were strategically planned tank games against the Magic. This one didn't really fit that bill. On SGA, Mark Daigneault says the game-to-game thing is not sustainable in terms of just in and out on a nightly basis. We're obviously running out of games here. He also said that in the next few days, the Thunder and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander would be having a conversation about his status for the rest of the season. They did not rule him out for the rest of the season, but reading between the lines, do you think we'll see Shai play in these final few games?
No, the only reason to play Shai would be if we get to the last two or three games and the Thunder has solidified that fourth spot one way or the other. And if you get to the last two or three games and he hadn't played in 2 weeks, why would you play?
Yeah,
so
what's
I think
the point?
I think we've seen the last of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, unfortunately, because he's fabulous to watch and he's been playing great.
Yeah.
So I just think probably not. I think just probably not.
I would also guess not. I just don't see a reason for it at this point, especially when you hear like, hey, we're going to have a conversation. That I don't think they're going to come back from that conversation and say, hey, we talked and he's going to play in every game for the rest of the season. That doesn't make much sense. But I was looking at his game totals, Barry. So his first year with the Thunder, he played 70 games. That's his high with the Thunder. That was the pandemic season, so he got back some in the bubble, but still shortened from an 82-game season because of everything that happened. Last season, he plays in 35 games. He misses the whole second half with a torn plantar fascia and never comes back. This season, he misses about a month with a right ankle sprain. His season is over 56 games. So in three seasons with the Thunder, he's played 161 games, which is fewer than the equivalent of two full seasons. So, you know, Shai's been here for 3 years now, but we've seen him play for less than what would be two seasons, which, you know, obviously the numbers he could put up in that time, but there's just, you know, it all adds up. Like, Shai's missed a lot of time since he's, you know, been in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, and I'm not ready to say he's injury prone, because what we don't know is, you know, if the Thunder's really playing all out, how many of these games would he miss?
Yeah, it's a great point.
And I'm not sure, well, I'm pretty sure the answer is not very many. He clearly, I think, could have come back at the end of last season. If they needed him to, I think they could have. He clearly could play out this season if they needed him to. With signed to this contract, he got the max, he got the big extension. When you have a guy's future, you need to look out for him.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if he's a guy that you're not sure if he's your future or not, if you don't have him under contract, well, there's no reason to protect his future all that much, because you might be saving him for the Clippers or the Knicks or whoever. But saving him for your own future and saving him for potential lottery luck, is pretty wise business. So
I
don't have a problem with the way this is working in terms of the Thunder's use of it.
No, I don't either. And you know, you brought up like not calling him injury prone, and I agree with that just because it's impossible to say. Again, we don't know, you know, how many games he would have played last year if those games mattered. We don't know how many games he'd play this year if these games mattered. So, but we also don't know, you know, like maybe some of it was serious enough to keep him out long term, and he's just, you know, has been dealing with a lot of things. I guess the one thing that would make you hopeful as far as injury concerns is like, it's not been one thing. It's not like he's dealt with a chronic injury. It's been sort of like the ankle sprain was just a fluke deal. You step on someone's foot, roll an ankle, and that's that. So it just made me think of like, you know, Shea is fun to watch. He's fun to cover. And we've missed a lot of Shea over the last 3 years. And tonight kind of put that in perspective.
Yeah. And it is sort of, to me, any time a season ends, whether it's in the playoffs, regular season, even a bad season like this, there's something a little bit of a bummer when the season's over. Because the way I look at it, you know, I look forward to the Thunder playing every couple, 3 days. And to me, it's a little bit of a bummer here, whatever date this is, March 28, 27, 29, wherever we're at the end of March.
26, you're close, Barry.
I'm close. So the season's going to be over in, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks.
What?
Is it 2 weeks from tonight or something? Or something like that. Anyway, the season's going to be over in 2 weeks. But the season's over now for watching Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, who's the best reason to watch the Thunder. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of a end of the road for Thunder fans and for the Thunder media who really enjoy watching this guy play.
It's also the end of the road this season for Josh Giddey, which things were certainly trending that way. I don't think that was, you know, neither Shea's injury update nor Josh's was a big surprise. But Giddey, they kept pushing back the timeline. It's just hip soreness. We didn't learn much about the injury. But today, Mark Daigneault says that there's just not enough games left in the season for Josh to really get back, and not worth rushing him back, which – that makes sense as well. But it's been a while since we've seen Giddey. When he was playing, he was fantastic by rookie standards. Four-time Western Conference Rookie of the Month. Going to pull up his final line here to read it off, because it's very well-rounded, as we all know. Josh Giddey, 12.5 points, 7.8 rebounds, 6.4 assists per game. Played 54 games, averaged 32 minutes per game. Shot 42% from the field, 26% from three. Barry, just sort of, I guess, put a bow on Josh Giddey's rookie season, because now it's over.
Yeah, well, he was far greater than anyone could have hoped. He was as advertised in the sparkling rookie prospectives. You know, you look back at Darius Baisley, what kind of player they said he was going to be. He wasn't that kind of player at all, hasn't turned out to be. He's been productive and good in other ways, but we got exactly what the draft Nick sort of proclaimed about this guy.
He was the best passer in the draft, and that's right. What people said. So,
and that's exactly right. And not a great shooter, but and just a swell fellow, although, I mean, he's from Australia, so, you know, it sort of was a redundant. But it's a great draft pick. Big disappointment when the Thunder fell to sixth last spring in the lottery. Little bit of trepidation when that sixth pick became Josh Giddey, and you think, that's not going to expedite the Thunder rebuild. But turns out the guy's really good. And, you know, you'd rather have Cade Cunningham. You'd rather have Evan Mobley. But he's pretty dang good. So,
yeah.
You know, he...
I'd rather have Scotty Barnes, but that one's closer. But yeah, it's a really good rookie class. It really is.
And so it was a good draft pick, and it gives you hope that even again, if you don't have lottery luck this season, it doesn't mean despair.
Yeah.
Because if you know what you're doing, and the Thunder usually does, you're going to get another really good player.
Yeah.
Of the young variety.
The disappointing part about Giddey's injury is just, when you look at rookie of the year voting, and you know where he's going to finish on the all rookie teams, maybe he's not going to slide all that much. But you know he was. You know, putting together quite a campaign. Like, I don't think he was ever going to win it, but he could have finished in the top three. I doubt he'll finish in the top three now. I think one is going to be Evan Mobley. I think two is going to be Scottie Barnes. Maybe Cade is third. But I bet Giddey will finish in the top five still. But you look at his games, he played 54 games, a lot of guys across the league. We forget with all the COVID earlier this season, like guys missed a lot of games. So it's not going to hurt him too much, but it certainly like ends his chances of obviously sweeping Western Conference Rookie of the Month awards and actually contending for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not. I assume he'll be first team all rookie. I assume the people around the league, I think, are clued into him. But even that's not assured. Thanks to this season-ending situation, and you mentioned it, but you know, to sweep every month of the Western Conference All Rookie Award, there was every reason to believe he was going to win in March too.
Yeah,
he won't now, of course. I don't even know who will. Doesn't matter. But that would have been a cool thing. Say he won all five of the Rookie of the Month awards.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's, I wanted to, we were bringing up, my mind went blank for a second, but, we're going to get ballots soon for, you know, all NBA teams and everything like that. And I don't know if you followed it today, Barry, but there's this huge controversy of how Jokic and Embiid are going to be listed. Because everyone thinks they're going to be 1-2 in MVP voting, but if you want to vote traditionally, they're both centers. They both exclusively play their minutes at the five, although Jokic is basically everything. But so one of those guys could potentially win MVP and wind up on a lot of second team All NBA ballots. They could be voted. They're going to be listed at both forward and center, so you could sort of play around with it and put one at forward and one at center, but that's going to skew some of the votes. And I know this, it's not a huge deal, but did you follow any of that today or have any thoughts on it?
I have not followed it today at all, but I have followed it over the years. Some of this pertains to All-Star voting, because they do the same silly nonsense when it comes to All-Star voting and the All-NBA. I mean, it's just nonsense. It's ridiculous. The truth of the matter is, a center fielder in baseball for the Angels and a center fielder for the Mets in baseball is basically the same position. A center for the Buffalo Bills and a center for the Dallas Cowboys is basically the same position. A center for the Philadelphia 76ers and a center for the Phoenix Suns might not do anything at all alike.
Or like the Nuggets and Sixers.
So the concept of positions in the NBA voting is just asinine.
Yeah. And so you think it should be five best players, five, just take position out of it?
Put the 12 best players on, or pick the five best starters for the All-Star game. Pick the five best players for the All-NBA team. Let me tell you what somebody would do if they had Joel Embiid and Jokic on the same team. They would find a way to play them together.
Yeah, exactly. Someone brought that up.
No one would say, you have to sit down until the other guy gets tired. Yeah. That would not be happening.
You'd be the one to tell Joel Embiid he's got to come off the bench.
So it's just nonsense. I mean, especially since we've had, 5, maybe going on 10 years of recognition of positionless basketball. I mean, that's become a concept.
Yeah.
And even a named concept in the NBA. So the people at the league office.
Look at LeBron. Like, what he plays everything.
What position does LeBron James play? What position does LeBron James play? Mostly, you know what? Here's what he plays. He plays quarterback on offense, and he plays middle linebacker on defense. That's what LeBron does. So let's put him in the Pro Bowl, why don't we? So it's just, I'd really like to ask somebody, whoever's doing this, let me talk to the person who's doing this. Who signed off on this?
It's someone in the league office that's making these decisions.
Somebody needs to say up and say, this is why we're doing it. There's no good reason for it. None. There is zero reason for it.
Wow. And I'm so glad I brought this up.
And listen, here's the other thing. You know why we don't know who's doing this or why no one can explain it? Because it's not explainable.
Yeah.
It's inexplicable. It's just, it's nonsense. I guess they're trying to connect with some silly notion of tradition from 60 years ago when you could look at the Philadelphia 76ers with Luke Jackson and Hal Greer and Billy Cunningham and say, oh, he's a center, he's a guard, he's a forward. Mm-hmm. I didn't get the order right, but everybody knows what I mean. So, I mean, it was 60 years ago. I mean, what position did Scottie Pippen play? I mean, this is not necessarily even a new concept. So,
this sounds like a Scissor Tales entry.
Well, it probably ought to be. It's just nonsense.
Hey, and guess what? Here's the good news, Barry. You've already written it. All you need to do is go transcribe our podcast from you talking about this.
Well, maybe I'll put it on my list.
I just wanted to add one thing off topic because I asked Mark Daigneault about this tonight. Obviously, St. Peter's plays tomorrow, still in the tournament. What a cool story. And a lot of people have sort of compared it, just as far as the unlikeliness of it, to George Mason's run. Now, George Mason made the Final Four. They were an 11 seed. They knocked off UConn during that tournament run. A manager for UConn was Mark Daigneault. I asked Mark about it tonight and asked if he was on the bench for that game when George Mason beat UConn in overtime. He said he wasn't because the NCAA regulates during the tournament how many guys can be on the bench. So I'm not really sure where he was, but he was a manager, I think, in his sophomore year on that team. So I was just looking for some sort of connection. There's not much there, but I just wanted to bring that up because I thought it was cool. And to bring it back to George Mason, Jim Larrañaga, the coach of that team, is still coaching in the tournament as well, leading Miami right now. So, you know, not a strong connection, but a little bit of one. How do you sort of compare, like, George Mason and St. Peter's?
Oh.
Do you think St. Peter's is, like, more impressive even?
St. Peter's is more impressive for the seed number. And the seed is really, let me promise you, the committee doesn't have time to sit there and debate between St. Peter's at 15 and I don't know, South Dakota State at 13. They don't have time. They didn't spend any time doing that. They just looked at a few metrics, put St. Peter's below South Dakota State, and went down the road. To me, the great differences, and this is true for all mid-majors, but within the mid-majors you can do it, is look at things that aren't on the net rankings, like budget, gym size. Look at the people in the huddle. Like last night, somebody tweeted about this. Look at when the coaches come out and have their little meeting before they talk to the players during a timeout. Look how many people are in the Purdue Brain Trust, and look how many people are in the St. Peter's Brain Trust. Let me tell you, who pioneered this. It's been going on forever, but in the last 5-6 years, I promise you, Texas Tech has 17 guys wearing suits on the sideline of a basketball game. Mm-hmm. It's the darndest thing. I've seen it live in Stillwater and Norman. I just keep thinking, who are all these people? You know, and St. Peter's is sitting there. You know, they're paying their basketball coach more than the basketball coach at, say, Tulsa Union gets. But it's a lot more comparable to Tulsa Union than it is to even a Wichita State or a Virginia Commonwealth or some other mid-major of note in recent years. St. Peter's is a tiny little place. I actually happen to do radio with Al Eschbeck. Al grew up in Jersey City, home of St. Peter's. And as a kid, he said he went to St. Peter's games a lot because it's just down the road from his house and he liked college basketball. And so he's told me a lot about St. Peter's. I looked it up. I mean, St. Peter's is just an urban school with no aesthetics, no much of anything other than it's just a Jesuit school, you know, with a Catholic mission. And they play basketball and every, you know, a couple times they've done well in their league and now they're doing great. And it's not. It's just.
I think it's like mainly a commuter school as well.
Yeah, it's just. It's just an unbelievable story, but it's the beauty of basketball, especially college basketball, where the parity is sublime. Yeah. And we don't even know what that would look like in football. We can't even fathom it in football. I mean, Oklahoma can't beat Alabama, but St. Peter's can beat Kentucky on the basketball court.
It's incredible.
You know, everybody talks about, you know, Kentucky had four assistant coaches making more than the head coach of St. Peter's. Kentucky has four basketball players making more than, you know, and that would have been that would have been true before the NIL. might be more than four. Might be 14. So, you know, it's just an incredible story. I'll be pulling for the St. Pete's. I assume the clock's going to strike midnight on them. I mean, they can't keep pulling this off. But you know what? They've come this far.
Yeah.
And literally anybody could win in the NCAA title, and that includes St. Peter's, the way they're playing. So it's the greatest postseason in American sport, the NCAA tournament. Yeah. We've experienced it together. Me and you were at the gym in Columbia, South Carolina, when we saw UCF have Duke on the line.
Yeah.
And Zion almost toppled over, and, you know, it didn't work out. But
Zion and Taco Fall.
That's right. That's right. So it's the best postseason. Now, the regular season has 1,000 things wrong with it. But this tournament, number one, the NFL playoffs, number two, they're the best postseason in American sport.
Yeah, it's incredible, and I love the tournament, and it's fun to, like, you know, talk to Mark about it, talk to just some players, and we were in here pregame in the media room, and Jeremiah Robinson Earl, he walks behind us, and I think he's talking to Trey Mann, but he's just talking about, like, the Villanova culture and everything like that, and just so proud of Villanova for still being in it. And it's just cool to see, like, guys at this level engaged and paying attention to it as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Now, if it stretched over 6 weeks, like the NBA, or 8 weeks, like the NBA playoffs, a little bit harder to stay engaged. But it's, you know, it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Skip 3 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Skip 5 days and 6 days, and Saturday, Monday, we got us a winner. So
yep.
It's literally 17, 18 days.
All right, well, we will wrap it up with the NCAA Tournament Talk and the Thunder Buddies podcast. Thank you so much for listening, as always, and we'll be back with you Monday night. It is a big one, a very, very big one. The Thunder is in Portland to tank on.
Quite accurately, I would say. What's your tank on the situation, St. Joe?
My tank on, my tank aways. everything is going to be quite tanky. Thank you again for listening, and we'll talk to you then.
We're tanking off.